the last time the economy looked this bad, the stock market tanked. The economy collapsed and inflation hit record highs. But at the same time, the price of gold shot up 1,300%. It could happen again. Can you afford to miss what could be the biggest gold and silver boom of our generation? Not to mention, precious metals can potentially safeguard your future with tangible assets rather than just digits on your bank manager's screen, which could disappear at the press of a button. Visit the link in the description below or call 855-913-0814. That's 855-913-0814 to protect your retirement savings and get up to $10,000 in free silver. This offer is exclusive to the United States. So if you're in the US, call and protect your wealth today. We're joined today by Michael Yon. He was just on with us last week and we were just fascinated by the information. In fact, some viewers said that it was one of the best interviews we've conducted, and it's because Michael is just such an interesting character traveling around the world. He's currently in the Netherlands. He's just attended the Dutch farmer protests and he has an update for us. Michael, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello from Den Haag, in The Hague, what we call it, The Hague. They call it Den Haag. This is one of two capitals of Netherlands, right? This is the parliamentary capital. So this is where the government seat is, actually. And Amsterdam is more like, say, their New York, right? A lot of countries have sort of two capitals. In a sense, we have had in the past and as well. We've had, of course, Washington, D.C. is the political capital in New York. Fashion themselves as something they no longer are.
Yes, absolutely. So you sent me some footage over the weekend of the Dutch farmer protests. We'll bring some of that up on the screen right now. We can see a lot of people turned up. It looks like there was a lot of support for the farmers by the people. And you warned us last week, Michael, that actually the government was planning on sending the military to these protests. Did that end up happening?
No, but that really, well, if it did, let's say I didn't see it. It certainly was not at the protest that I was at. There was at least two protests. And this gets really interesting. There was an announcement that the army may come, and I didn't see them, but that scared off a bunch of people. For instance, this one group that we talked about before, BB Better, remember? Boron Bevolkerung Beweging in Dutch. I don't speak Dutch, but it's Boron. Boren means farmer, and Bevolkerung means citizens, and then Bewegung means movement. So the BBB, right? So they call themselves the BB Better Party, right? They're a clear left-wing shill, right? But a lot of people don't get it. They don't, I mean, they, even on thousands of signs that are all over Netherlands, these signs are everywhere. You know, BB Better, they're out in the farm fields all over the place when I drive on the highways. But BB Better is this party that formed in 2019 mysteriously, and there's a lot of other mysteries around it, but they're clearly, you know, to people who study information war or who are just perceptive to these things, it's really clear to us that this is just a shill that's designed to divide the farmers apart from each other, right? So in other words, many of the farmers went with the BBB, and it's right on their signs, BB Better, Build Back Better, right? Which is clearly, you know, they say it in your face who they are. But it's divided a lot of the farmers who've decided to go with BBB instead of another main party that sticks with the farmers, which is FVD, which is Forum for Democracy. And that one is, Forum for Democracy is more with the farmers. That's very clear because I spend significant time with them checking them out. Some of the farmers don't like FVD for different reasons, of course. I mean, some people, you know, obviously the shoe doesn't fit everybody. So that's why you see this. Anyway, interestingly, the BBB Better Party is ran by a woman named, well, actually, there's some question about that, actually, if it's a woman or a guy. So it's one of those situations. But yeah. Caroline van der Plas, I mean, I hear people discussing that. I don't know. And so... Caroline van der Plas, you know, on last Friday before the protest on Saturday, she said that she was afraid for her safety, so she was not going to even attend the protest. Right, she wasn't even going to go. So this was all over national news in Netherlands. hey, Caroline van der Plas from the BB Better Party is not going to attend the protest on the 11th of March in Den Haag because she's afraid for her safety. And so she didn't go. So a lot of her group, the BB Better Party, decided they weren't going to go. This was all in the news, or at least the news was reporting this. So Eva Vlaardingerbroek, which many people may remember from places like War Room. She's been on War Room a lot. She's been on Tucker Carlson a lot, that sort of thing. She's a very pretty blonde hair, blue eyed Dutch woman. So if you know who I'm talking about there, if you've seen her on Tucker, that's Eva. So Eva called me up and she said, look, a lot of the people are afraid. They're not even going to go. Caroline van der Plas from the BBB party, I call it the Build Back Better party because that's what's on their signs all over the place. She's not going. And Eva said, but I'm going. I'm going in the first tractor. So Eva, and she's only 26 years old. She's just taking charge and moving out, right? So she went and got in the first tractor. So that, you know, so Eva, you know, drove like 3 hours in the tractor. It was actually 3 hours and to get to the protest. And then I was right in front of her on the ground waiting for her. And so she showed up, first tractor at the protest, got out, got up on a stage and started speaking. It was great. So the people got all fired up. Look, Eva came, but okay, that's one protest.
Before you go on about the other protests, so we've seen many types of infiltration, Michael, at different protests, different movements. You know, you even had in Canada at one stage, they were actually leaving bricks there for the protesters. They'd gone in and stacked up bricks to encourage them to commit acts of violence or potentially bricks being supplied for those people that are coming in as antagonists. We just saw how grossly misrepresented January 6th was. And, you know, we still have questions that are unanswered about Ray Epps, for example. So these types of characters are installed in these protests, but also in these political parties. How important is controlled opposition within information warfare?
Hugely important. You know, on the BRICS too, when I was in Hong Kong, the CCP operatives would leave piles of bricks, and we knew what they were doing because I was there for 7 months in that Hong Kong fighting until they finally kicked me out. If you look up my name in Hong Kong, you'll see them, the police escorting me to the airplane and putting me on the airplane and making me leave. Right. So, I mean, but I saw a lot of the fighting. I saw these tricks with the bricks and that sort of thing. And believe it or not, Antifa was there. American Antifa was there. I spent a lot of time with Antifa. And that was my first real encounters with Antifa, was actually in Hong Kong. It was only later that I was in Portland and in Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia and Atlanta with them and that sort of thing. But yeah, my first encounters and very close encounters. We would have dinner together and that sort of thing, breakfast sometimes. I was in the protest with them. You know, it was like, yeah, I was learning a lot from them. Anyway, separate story. But when it comes to these controlled opposition or infiltrators or APs, as they're called, agent provocateurs. This is like my office. I see this in a protest and movements around the world that I go to. So it's sort of the same thing. It's the same duck of different colors, you might say.
And how long will they play the role for, Michael?
Let me tell you that. You mean the agent provocateurs?
Yeah, or even the controlled opposition. I mean, the freedom movement, talks about controlled opposition a lot, and it is a real thing. But what happens is there's so much, you know, because we're aware of it, there's so much suspicion of even people that are doing the right thing, and the controlled op has become so advanced that you know, sometimes people can't differentiate between the two. So this Build Back Better party that you're talking about, that's a very good example of controlled opposition. They're playing their part, they're pretending they're with the farmers, but their logo is such a dead giveaway.
Yeah, they'll tell you right in your face, but they leave this. For many people, it'll be ambiguous, or they'll make that emotional decision, like they don't like the FVD for some reason or another, or you know, and so they'll make that jump. But how long will they go on? The controlled opposition can go on for forever. I mean, they may never totally reveal themselves, right? But the APs, agent provocateurs, you may never even know who they are. That's a separate thing. Agent provocateurs are people who will go to like a protest or that sort of thing and get people riled up to do something, right? Can maybe like when I was at the January 6th thing, I immediately saw agent provocateurs. In fact, I was the very first one that was saying that. I told Giuliani, I said, listen, there's APs everywhere. You know, it's like, I mean, this is what I do for a living. I go around to these things. And so I can spot an AP as quickly as I can spot a duck or an alligator in Florida. And by the way, this, when people show up with drums, those sorts of drums, and they're beating it with that sort of cadence, and people are just making mindless chants, those are always leftists. And yesterday at the second protest, you can see, or not yesterday, that was a Saturday now, today's Monday. And so Saturday at the protest, I was at the farmers protest, and there was another Extinction Rebellion protest, which is like the green, very radical greens. They were going to come to disrupt the farmers protest. And they were on the A-12 highway coming towards Den Haag. And somehow they got stopped. I wasn't with them. I don't know how they got stopped. It was probably the police that stopped them, but I do not know this because I wasn't there. But they were stopped on the A-12 highway. This is interesting. So the Dutch police called the German police. This is really interesting on multiple levels. The Dutch police called the German police and asked for backup with their water cannons, which it's windy out here, isn't it? So the German police came into Netherlands with their water cannon trucks and started hosing down Dutch people. So this is like the Dutch government calling the, remember, Germany invaded this place. This is in everybody's memory all the time here, that this place was, where I'm sitting at right now, was totally Nazi occupied territory not very long ago, right? That only ended in 1945 when the hungersnot, which is a famine, ended here, that was caused by the Nazis. I'm sitting in a place where there was a famine in 1944 and 45 caused by the Nazis, right? A literal famine where people were starving to death. And so, you know, often you hear Dutch people say, you know, where are you going? They say, I'm going to get my bicycle back. Going to get my bicycle back means they're going to Germany, because the Germans used to steal their bicycles when they came to Netherlands in the war. That's, yeah, I'm going to get my bicycle back. So anyway, on Saturday, the German Polizei shows up with their water cannon. Here, it gets even more interesting. They started hosing people down. You can see it on the videos online. Sorry, got something in my eye. And one of the trucks, one of the police trucks says Hun 2 on it, H-U-N. So for those who aren't tracking on the Hun is a derogatory term for Germans. It means like savages, right? So if you hear like, you know, some of the old British would say, oh, the Hun is either at your feet or at your throat. You know, that's what Churchill said, actually. The Hun is either at your feet or at your throat. And the Dutch would call them the Hun as well. So it meant basically savage Germans. And one of the police water cannons was Hun 2. You can't even make up this stuff. I immediately sent that photo over to Matt Bracken, a retired Navy SEAL officer, a friend of mine. I think he's been on your show a lot of that, or he's been on with Alex Jones. And Matt's like, what? It's called the Hun. He put it on Twitter. You just can't make up this stuff. It just keeps getting deeper and deeper. But anyway, that protest, you know, that was hit with the Hun truck, the Extinction Rebellion, they never made it to the farmers protest. And so the farmers protest that I was at, they wear these red handkerchiefs in symbol of solidarity. I showed this on Alex's show, by the way. The Extinction Rebellion never made it to the farmers protest. The farmers was like, it was like a MAGA protest. It was really friendly. Like I said, it was safe. You didn't need a helmet. I didn't worry about getting shanked or something. You know, the farmers were like at the MAGA protest, I used to have a good time at the MAGA protest. And when I get back to America, I'm sure I will again. The only time you need a helmet at a MAGA protest is when the left wingers with their drums show up. And that's another thing. On Saturday, the Extinction Rebellion, they had their drums, and they're doing the mindless chant, something like, what were they chanting? You are not forgotten. You are not forgotten. You are not forgotten. And they got the drums going. Just beware, if you show up to a protest, I saw them at January 6th. People showed up with drums. I said Masako Ganaha was there with me. Look at those drums. We know what that probably means. Got a little closer, made video of all of them. You know, yeah, they were agent provocateurs. Well, they were clear agent provocateurs. And I started saying it right at that time. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's all right. It's important for us to know this stuff because, as I said, you know, even with the Canada protests, I was speaking to a friend over there at the time, Rob Primo, and he was talking to me about the BRICS. And I said, well, this is clear indication that they're trying to get incite violence. There's probably going to be someone there on the day that incites violence that's there as a plant. You know, it's important to reinforce to the people to remain peaceful. So, you know, I mean, this is standard protest practice. But it's important for people to be aware of this stuff in case it's happening in their hometown. So it's really fantastic that the military didn't turn up, but also sad that people were deterred by that scare tactic. So it was clearly used as a scare tactic. What's disgusting to me, Michael, is that the military is still being used to scare people. You know, people aren't supposed to be afraid of their own military. They're supposed to feel protected by them. A similar thing was done here in Australia. During the lockdowns, the military were brought to the streets of Bankstown in Sydney to patrol the streets, and they were saying to us on television, short of coming to your door with the military and police, we don't know how else, and forcing you, we don't know how else we're going to get people to get injected. So there really has been a weaponization of the military against the people, and they continue to use these people, the country's own military, as a scare tactic. It's disgusting.
It is. And, you know, the U.S. military has long been respected. I mean, I grew up in Winter Haven, Florida, a wonderful place to grow up with a lot of respect for the military. I mean, for instance, the National Guard Armory downtown in Winter Haven, Florida is right next to our high school football field, right? It's still there. You can look at it on Google Earth, or if you're in Winter Haven, just drive by and look at it. And look at the cannons, the howitzers that are right beside the street by Brigham Elementary School. That's where my brother went to elementary school. There is only a chain link fence between the road and the cannons. I mean, it's a chain link fence that literally an alligator can climb over. Alligators, by the way, can climb over our chain link fences. And so if you have a chain link fence around your house and you're next to a lake and you think that'll save your dog, it won't. I'm just letting you know that. But anyway, there's only a I'm from Florida. I grew up hunting alligators, you know. I was actually just over there about 10 days ago spotting some at night with my spotlight with Doc Chambers. But before I came here, Doc Chambers and I were with some people doing some defensive agricultural work. I say defensive, they're growing their own food. And we watched the SpaceX launch, and then we're hunting for alligators in the same night. And then I flew over here. But because the food issue is everywhere, right? Why go for the Dutch farmers is a big question. Why the Dutch? Well, it's not just the Dutch. They're going for American farmers too. They're going for Canadian farmers and Germans and others. But the Dutch in particular, why am I with the Dutch farmers? Well, I'm with the Dutch farmers for I lived in Europe for 6 years, and I know a lot. And I lived in Germany, Frankadeutsch, and I lived in Poland, and I've been to Netherlands quite a lot of times, and with Dutch people quite a lot. And I know that Dutch people don't like to waste time, like Germans. They don't like to waste time, and farmers in every country I go to don't like to waste time. And so when I was over in Mexico watching the invasion of our border across the Rio Grande, I saw the Dutch farmers blocking the streets and starting fires in the streets, and I was like, why are Dutch farmers in the streets? Now, if it's French farmers, I would not even get on the airplane, because that's just what French farmers do. You know, it's normal behavior. But it's not normal for Dutch. And the Dutch farmers are some of the most, if not the most, efficient in the world. I mean, they get more per square inch of land here than you wouldn't believe what they do. You should see some of these greenhouses. I was in one last week. Anyway, it's a separate story. These aren't your mother's greenhouses. Let's put it that way. These are high-tech scientific things, you know? But when the Dutch farmers are out there in the streets, burning stuff in the streets, first of all, they're Dutch. Dutch don't like to do that. Dutch are not like the French. Dutch are more, they have what's called the polder cultuur, which means like a negotiating culture, or they will meet people halfway, right? they don't like the, they're like Japanese in that regard, like English actually. They'll tend to like to negotiate, or like Southerners like me, we will tend to try to avoid conflict, right? Well, then Southerners will, you know, Scott Irish will then tend to go Scott Irish wild too, but more like the French. But the, but we'll try to find common ground first. Say I'm sorry, you know, meet halfway, that sort of thing. That's the way the Dutch are. It's called the Polderkultur. It actually has a name, right?
Right.
And so why were the Dutch burning? First of all, they're farmers and they're Dutch. So I flew over here and I went to some of the farmers that were literally blocking streets, and I said, why are you blocking the streets? I just came from Mexico to ask this question, by the way. And they start telling me an earful, and then I'm out with all these farmers and farm after farm after farm, which is what I've been doing now again. And they're telling me what's going on. And then I'm out with politicians and others and hearing all these different sides of the story from the scientists and all this. And the bottom line is the WEF, the World Economic Forum, is consanguinated. They are just totally entwined with the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. And they are, I mean, they're married and making babies. I used to look at the CCP and the WEF as being just cooperative, but that's clear that they're way beyond that. They're like married and having little, eventually they're going to divorce and fight each other. That much is clear. But they are totally trying to take the food security away from the farmers.
Yes.
And put them in smart cities. And the name of the smart city here is Tri-State City.
Yes, you mentioned that last time. You mentioned that last time, and then you discussed the wolves and how, you know, what I think is so interesting, Michael, is that, and I've said this many times before, they have studied human behavior specific to every country so much for so many years that they know what tactics need to be used where. You know, the UN boasts about the Melbourne experiment, which was one of the longest lockdowns in the world in the state of Victoria. And they talk about how this is going to be great in the future, essentially, for climate lockdowns. And so it's very clear that they understand people well enough. Why did they get away with it in Melbourne? Well, because it's a very large leftist population, you know, very compliant people. And and not all, don't get me wrong, there was a lot of pushback in Victoria, but it's more left and progressive, which is actually regressive, than the other states, you could say, primarily due to the premier being an absolute nutcase. And so when you look at that, you think, well, look at the certain tactics they deployed. Then you look at China, for example, which you're saying the WEF praises China and says we need to be more like China, who was just locking people in their apartments until they burned to death.
Maria Trudeau did that. Remember, Trudeau did that.
I don't remember
him. He praised China.
Oh, praise China. Yes.
He actually openly praised China.
Yes, anyway, many of them do. But no, that's okay. I thought you meant Trudeau was locking people in their apartments. I thought I didn't know about that. But, you know, China killing animals in the street, you know, putting millions of people into camps. And we've got the head of the WEF, or the alleged head, Klaus Schwab, saying this is great. We should all be more like China. And the other Western leaders parroting, oh, yes, China, very good. You know, this, it's so clear that they want us to be this way. But again, back to your previous point, they have specific tactics that they deploy. The agenda, the outcome is the same, but their path to get there is going to be specific to that country. So the attack on the Dutch farmers is a unique one.
It's unique in it's part of the bigger battle plan. That's clear. But it's unique in its intensity to try to knock out 50% of them at this time, right? Which means all of them, essentially. But they want to make the WEF, CCP. And by the way, let's talk about Tri-State City. Tri-State City is this huge city. You can look at it online. I was talking about it with Jordan Peterson yesterday, actually. And we talked about it. There's maps online. So look up map of Tri-State City. You'll see the map. I'm in the middle of it right here, right? So this will be the future Tri-State City if this battle is lost, right? Tri-State City will be this giant smart city. They call it Tri-State because it'll be most of, or maybe possibly all of Netherlands, but right now the map is drawn most of Netherlands, about two-thirds, and then Belgium and part of Belgium and part of Germany. So that's Tri-State City. And the end of the railhead, by the way, from Shanghai all the way across Asia, so from China from Pacific all the way to the Atlantic. It ends at Rotterdam, Netherlands, which is close to here, right? So this is where the railhead ends between China and the Atlantic, right here. It's not a coincidence that they, you know, want to make this tri-state city, right? And so they need this farmland because the farmers own 60 to 70% of the land here. Actually, different numbers out there from different groups, how much they actually own. But let's say 60 to 70% to be in the ballpark, right? To be accurate, according to the lowest I've seen is 62% and the highest is 70%. Anyway, so in about 52,000 farmers, right? So they want to take this land from the farmers. But the farms are one of the huge parts of the Dutch economy and give them a lot of stability and also social stability. This is why Stalin, I think we talked about this last time, in 32 and 33, wanted to knock out the kulaks, because the kulaks were they were labeled kulaks. They called it kulakization. Basically, it was labeling people racist or fascist or Nazis or, or Nazis today, you know, labeling, throwing these labels on people, like labeling Jews, labeling Polish people. The Polish people had to wear a P. The Jewish people had to wear Star of David, that sort of thing.
Yes.
Right? Labeling them for later extermination, right? Or the kulaks, as Stalin did in Ukraine in the 30s and had the Holodomor, the huge famine, right? An interesting book on that, Red Famine. Anyway, but written by a leftist, a globalist. And anyway, so that's what's happening with the farmers now. There's a big information campaign against the farmers here, trying to split the people, the Dutch people, away from the farmers, even though the farms are, you know, everybody here is related to a farm family, practically everybody. And the farmers here, we got to talk about fishermen and wolves too, but the farmers and fishermen, let's group those together. They go back to generations. They don't even know how many generations they were farmers here. So this is the way the kulaks were, right? They are wed to the land. They are part of the culture. They are part of. So that's why Stalin and others in Mao and in China had to get rid of the farmers, because they are core to the culture. That's why you see an information war here, not to call Netherlands Holland, right? Now the Dutch government no longer will even say Holland. That's why it was interesting to hear yesterday Jordan Peterson during our interview. It's not live yet, but should be in a couple of days, but he was calling it Holland. I wanted to say that's great, but we got off on a separate topic.
So was he interviewing you about? What were his interest points?
This actually, and also, you know, Jordan, he likes to talk about psychological aspects, and because he's really brilliant in that regard. And he really, we were together, by the way, in Netherlands last year. I went on his, I was over here and somehow he found me. I don't remember how, but somehow he found me and he called me and asked me if I wanted to go on his podcast. And I said, sure, I would love to. And we did it and it went viral. And so then he came over here and we spent several days together. I took him out to a farm and then arranged a couple of dinners. And I went to a couple of his events, which were really cool. I'd never been to a Jordan Peterson event. I'd seen him on TV or on podcast. And by the way, in person, he's a lot more likable than he is on TV. I like him on TV. I like his podcast and I watch him. But in person, he's like Alex Jones. In person, you really like Alex. You know what I mean? And on TV, you're like, he's a wild man.
Jay Dyer, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. We joke about, us being on the Voldemort show. We joke about Alex being Voldemort because he who shall not be named. I'm curious to know, yes. Do you believe that Jordan Peterson is awake to the agenda?
Oh yeah, and he's tracking. He's definitely tracking. He's I don't know if he was awake years ago. I don't know, because I was in the wars and I wasn't paying attention to much outside of the wars. But certainly in the recent few years when I started really paying attention to Jordan, he's definitely, and he's increasingly, you can see he's getting more and more tuned in and dialed in. Can I say one thing?
Yes.
Something I heard Voldemort say, he who shall not be named, Alex. I love that. Alex was talking about, for instance, Joe Rogan being mostly left. I think he said that when I was on with Alex in the studio. I'm pretty sure he said that. Anyway, I saw Alex say that at some point recently. And that's what Jordan said yesterday. He said Jordan named off my name while we were on the podcast, so I suppose it'll be up in the next day or two. He was talking about how some of these podcasters like Joe Rogan are decidedly pretty leftist, right? Did he use the term leftist, or he may have? We'll have to watch anyway. Sure. But he used the same similar language to what Alex used, which actually was interesting, huh?
Most definitely. I think that, you know, the types of audiences that tune in to the likes of Joe Rogan and Jordan Peterson are quite varied. And it's the nature of, I suppose, their delivery and the way that they present information that will attract all types. Whereas, you know, when you're kind of screaming from the rooftops and you're just hitting people with the hard, cold, hard facts, rather than just exploring as maybe someone who's impartial, it will attract a different type of audience, you know. So I respect both approaches. You know, everyone has their part to play in this, I guess, Michael. I just wanted to.
Alex has turned out to be right, though. I mean, let's say on his batting average, he would be a home run hitter. You know, he would be the guy you put up. Yeah, he's going to strike out occasionally, of course, because he's out on the front lines all the time. You don't get everything right, but when it comes to just general accuracy, he has turned out to be bizarrely accurate. Yeah.
He's a very, very intelligent man. A very intelligent man. I had this map up of Tri-State City up before, and I just wanted to ask you about it because you can't see it right now, Michael, but the viewers can. So this is Amsterdam. This is you were talking about the train network, although I'm not sure I can see that on this city, but it's connecting to Greater London. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, I mean, look at it. There's different maps of it that'll show different aspects of the future and developing infrastructure. You can see some that'll be like the LOCs, you know, the roads and the railways, and then others that are, you know, where people will live and that sort of thing. Oh, we have to talk about the migration, but can we talk about the fishermen because this goes in with what we're talking about now.
Yes, talk about the fishermen.
The fishermen are being attacked just like the farmers, right? So we have to talk about them as a group. Interestingly, I just talked with one fisherman, and he said he's the last of 32 ships. They call them ships, the fishing ships. In his village, 31 others are out of business now. They've been bureaucratically attacked, and they're just gone. And he says he's constantly has to do court cases. He said his family has been fishing since the 1400s that he knows of, and that's where they lose track at some point in the 1400s. And we talked about it for quite a while on Saturday, and he invited me. I asked him, actually. I invited myself. I said, hey, can I go fishing with you? And he said, sure. He's going to start fishing again in May. I said, okay, I'll come back, and we'll go. And he said, oh. And I said, why are they trying to knock out the fishermen? He said, because we're seeing a lot of the things that they don't want us to see, like the windmills that are not working out to sea. Out at the in the ocean, and we see that happening, and we know what's happening, and we see some of the pollution they're doing out at sea, and we talk about these things openly because, you know, we're fishermen, we're like basically farmers of the sea. We just say what we see, you know what I mean, and unguardedly, right? And so anyway, they've been knocking them out, and piece by piece. Interestingly, he told me about how important the fishermen have been in warfare in the past. He said, for instance, when the French came in the 1700s, his family and others were involved from his village, and the French Navy came. And back then, the fishermen were like the Navy. I mean, they were fishing most of the time, but sometimes they were the Navy. And they know every inch of these waters. They know everything about these waters. And they drew the French out, he said, you know, harassed the French Navy to follow the Dutch. And the Dutch tricked them and pulled them into a place where the tide stuck their ships and caused a huge amount of them to drown. And they actually lost the war. He said the French lost because of that trick by the Dutch fishermen. He said this has happened over and over where the Dutch fishermen go out and trick enemies into dangerous waterways and let the waters finish them off. I said to him, I said, you know, when I was out with the Afghans in Afghanistan, they would use the desert in the same way. They'll trick you into certain They'll let the desert do their work. They'll just trick you into that trap, and then they'll let Mother Nature take care of business, you know. And That's actually, awesome. Some of the Iraqis would do this too. Some of the Iraqis
Apart from their knowledge of the waters, I presume that it'll also have to do with the fact that it's another form of self-sufficiency. You can go out and feed yourself in the waters. I heard a recent segment on Fox about the overregulation of fishing in a certain region that's now led to this huge infestation of sharks because of the overregulation of fishing, not allowing fishermen to go out and fish. And so it's definitely something that I think is happening everywhere. I don't know exactly what the situation in Australia is, but I dare say it would be the same everywhere. You know, Michael, here in Australia, we had a legislation introduced in the state of Victoria last year that aimed to limit people from venturing outside of just designated walkways in natural reserves. So they can't actually go and explore nature. In the city of Sydney, where they have the smart city map, where they were, sort of wargaming these ideas, they had a border that showed the districts that they don't want you to leave. And that border just so happened to end at the green areas, at the mountainous areas. They don't want people interacting with nature. And they're going to tell us that in the name of climate change, we need to be pushed into these cities and not go into nature. So, and why is that? Well, you have the ability to survive without depending on the government in nature. You have the ability to feed yourself, to make your own shelter, to, you know, go back to a way of living where you are not dependent on the state. But they want to make that completely impossible. Talk to us about the wolves. What was the developing story there? Because last time you said you couldn't quite yet talk about it.
Man, we have so much to talk about, Maria. Like on that one topic you just brought up, we could talk for like an hour. I really want to. but I'll go to the wolves though. That is such a
touch on it before you go to the wolves, because I think it's important.
Because the wolves are important too. But okay, like yesterday I was talking with Jordan about this, what you just mentioned. And Jordan said, you know, about one third of the people will just, they're so easy to brainwash, and you can just be re-brainwashed very quickly. You know, I mean, so they'll just do whatever if you say it in the right way and you wear the right clothes and you speak with the right cadence and this sort of thing, the right to people, about one third of the people will immediately fall into step, right? You got to stay in your home because of X. And they'll be like, okay, I got to stay in. You have to call. If you see your neighbor out, you have to call us. You know, they're the enemy, blah, blah. Okay, they're the enemy. And they'll rat out their whole neighborhood. They'll rat out their whole network of friends and family, because that's just about one third of the people will do that. You know, when you're a kid and you learn how to take a needle and rub it on a magnet and magnetize it and make a compass. You know what I'm talking about? I was into physics. So anyway,
I'm listening.
You can take a needle and rub it on a magnet, right? You just rub it a few times. And you put it on a cork in the water, and it's a compass. It'll tell you which way is north.
Right.
You can do that. And you can do it in like 5 minutes. If you got a needle at home right now, you can do it in 1 minute. You put it on a cork and it'll find north, right? Magnetic north anyway. You can turn that needle around and redo it the other way. And that's the way some people's minds are. You can brainwash them. And now they're pointing the direction you told them to brainwash, and then do it the other way. And now they're doing the other way. And yes. That's why they'll have the rainbow flag and the Ukraine flag and the BLM flag, which are all would kill each other instantly. But they fly on all three flags. I see that all in the Netherlands. Now, there's not as many Ukraine flags as there were last year. But when you would see the Ukraine flags, you would often see the rainbow flags together. Or many of the protests I was at, violent protests, where they would have those bricks in Portland or wherever in the United States, it would be the rainbow flag and Black Lives Matter flag together. You know, notwithstanding that a lot of the blacks would absolutely slaughter the rainbow flag people, right? Yes. You know what I mean? I grew up with blacks, so don't give me people don't need to give me the lecture. You know what I'm saying? I was raised partly by a black woman when my mother died. You know, I know more about the black culture in Florida than Obama ever will, based on his skin swatch. You know what I'm saying? I grew up with blacks. He did not. You know what I'm saying? And I was in the army with him. And so I know what'll happen with rainbows and Black Lives Matter. It's not a pretty marriage, right? And it's just so interesting. But these people can be brainwashed. Black Lives Matter. And Ukraine, and you know, rainbow flag, and they're all together, and these are just like in sharp contrast. They're just easily brainwashed. They'll always be easily brainwashed.
What do you believe is the key to the ones who can't be brainwashed?
Well, the ones who can't, because there's another section that are more difficult. Can I get another? I'm getting a coffee. All right. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, okay. Sorry. Right. I'm having to use the restaurant outside to do this. So, you know, I should order coffee. And so, another one. I love this place. But actually, they're from Morocco. The people that own this place are from Morocco. And anyway, where are we talking about?
The key to the people that can't be brainwashed. What is the key? You know, what is the immunity against brainwashing?
Rape of the Mind. Read that book. I mentioned it on Jordan. I mentioned it with you last time.
You did.
Rape of the Mind. I highly suggest reading Rape of the Mind, 1954, written right here in this country by a Dutch psychologist in 1954. It was published in 1954. A guy named Joost Mierlo, Dutch psychologist, and he talked about this section of people that are so easily brainwashed. And then there's that sort of middle of the bell curve. And then there's the other side that are very difficult to brainwash. Everybody can be brainwashed, but some people need a lot of coercion. You're like, you need the lock box, and you know, you need to be like frozen and kept in a hole and starved and kept awake, you know, for years on end. And eventually that's like forcible entry. You know what I'm saying? But you're not easily just persuaded with the winds. You're not a leaf blowing around. And I'm more in that group, and you clearly are as well. And so that's actually a lot of people as well. It's not like it's just a few of us. There's a lot of people that are more difficult to brainwash. And then there's some that, again, the enemies can come in. And I call them the enemies because it's the really evil people that come in and take advantage of the sheep. They are the sheeple. And they can be re-brainwashed. And, you know, you can hear President Grant talking about, not here, I mean, it's not on audio, but he wrote about it in 1879 when he was in Paris, and he talked about, thank you, Donkey Boy. He talked about, you know, these people that, you know, that the terrible politicians can come in and just brainwash and get them riled up to do anything he wants. And basically, he was talking about the equivalent of Antifa of today, right? You know, he was talking about that in 1879. By the way, President Grant, well, he wasn't president anymore. He had been president, ex-President Grant at the time, was doing a world trip, and he was in Paris, and he was talking about communists, and I mean communists. He was using, often I've said this, and people say, well, he couldn't have been talking about communists because it was 1879. I'm like, nope, he was talking about communists. Remember, the book came out in 1848. So, I mean, the word communist was in common use in the 1870s. So people like Grant realized the dangers of communists, and he was very clear about it. Anyway, I'll ramble on because I told you, Maria, I need 5 hours with you.
Well, I want to talk about the wolves, Michael, because last time you said that this was a particular thing that was being used as an attack against the farmers, and I'm interested to know how that's being done.
Wolves. Okay, this is really interesting. I talked with one of them. Well, let's say the chief wolf lady on Saturday as well. I've been trying to meet with her, and finally she just walked in. I'm like, oh, you're the wolf lady's here. And she came to talk with me. I was in this bus. And so we sat down. It was a protest, but it was in a quiet bus. And I got the recorder going. She let me record it. And it was really interesting. The wolves. Where did the wolves come from? Now, if you look at the World Economic Forum website, and you'll look at the nature stuff that you were just kind of hinting about it earlier. They want these like off limits nature places that you can't touch. You know what I mean? It's like nature is that, and we are in the test tube, which is like, no, we're not. We're part of Mother Nature. You know what I mean? I sleep with this thing that you're seeing now on the ground sometimes. I love this thing. So, I mean, the ground is like, you know, it's like, this is us, but they want to separate us off. Now, so if you look at the World Economic Forum website, they see at the tri-state city and this idea of smart states, smart cities, they are beautiful cities, as another term for them. They want us separate from nature. And you can see on their maps of you'll see wolves, you'll see bears and all kinds of things. Wolves and bears, where there's no wolves or bears now. Before there were wolves released here, well, how they got here, the government doesn't say they were released. They say they came in from Poland, which is nonsense. But anyway, Poland is, anyway, not to go into the geography of all this, but that's nonsense. But the idea that, well, before the wolves were released here, a law was passed to protect the wolves. A law was passed to protect the wolves. And a lot of the people are like, why are you passing a law to protect wolves? There's no wolves here. And others were like, they're going to release wolves. And they were labeled conspiracy theorists, of course. What do you mean they're going to? It was like an Alex Jones show. They're going to release wolves. Why would they be passing laws to protect wolves here if they're not going to release them? That's like, oh, that's a complete conspiracy. And now there's wolves running around. One was just killed not far from here last Friday. So like 10 days ago, killed by a car, right? And it was on a highway, right? And so, and the wolves are now killing people's sheep, and they'll just kill like 20 sheep and eat one, right? That's how wolves roll. And they kill horses. They killed a wolf recently, months ago, killed one of the prime ponies of, what's her name, Ursula von der Leyen, you know, the German politician, super globalist, killed her pony in Germany, in Saxony, and I think it was in Saxony. And they've got, and you can see online, they got the DNA from the wolf, from her pony. It ripped her pony to pieces, and they named the wolf, you know, that is wolf, you know, whatever. And that, you know, and there's an article, you know, about how its days are numbered. It was in German. Like, they're gonna go, ich spreche Deutsch. They're actually hunting that wolf. I don't know if they've killed it yet, but when it killed her pony, now if the wolves kill sheep here in Netherlands, if you one of the Dutch farmers said, the wolves here are more protected than the damn queen. That's exactly how he put it.
Oh,
They
well,
are more protected
it's
than the
no
damn queen.
surprise. I don't know if you saw, Michael, just today or just yesterday, there was an article talking about how the UK needed to build further infrastructure because Rishi Sunak's private pool at his residence was draining all the energy for the surrounding suburbs, and so they were going to build more infrastructure to be able to continue to heat his pool while people are struggling to pay their bills. You remember when Boris Johnson told people to, you know, if you're struggling with your electricity, just buy a kettle, a cheaper kettle. You know, it was just, I mean, ridiculous
Cheaper.
thing. A cheaper kettle, because then you know, it'll use a newer kettle will use less energy and you can buy it for cheap, or some nonsense that he said. But again, this is all tied into what you were talking about, the demoralization of society. They also want to, I often think about the Hunger Games, Michael. And
This is.
it was our health minister Brad Hazard that actually said, this is the New World Order, not in this order, and said this is the Hunger Games. Last year in press conferences, they openly said it. So they want to elevate themselves in this perception that they're somehow in the capital and they're the elites and everyone else is just out there to fight for their lives, essentially.
Yeah, it's clearly the Hunger Games, and we're clearly going into famine. I've been warning it. Well, I don't know how long Alex has been warning about it. He's probably been warning about it since 1850. You know how far ahead he tends to be on things. You know, he was probably his grandfather, great great grandfather, was probably warning about it. But I mean, but it's clearly coming, right? It's like the conditions are set.
Yes.
Let me finish off on the wolves. So,
Sure.
if the wolves are part dog, they're not protected. And so there are people now collecting DNA from the wolves, from the kills, and from trying to get DNA from that wolf that was actually just killed itself, actually on the street, on the highway, Friday, about 10 days ago, and getting DNA from their feces out in the forest and that sort of thing, which is difficult to find. But they're, so if the wolves are part dog, they're not, actually not protected. So that's quite interesting. So that's another angle, but I'm sure they'll end up just passing it, an
Well,
amendment to the law or something. But
Just as you were speaking before, I brought one of the World Economic Forum's articles up. You know, wolves and bear numbers are up in Europe, and your report shows, and grey wolf numbers have increased by 1,800%. Brown bear numbers have increased by 44%. It's really interesting to listen to see, and they're saying that the studies show that wildlife can help lock up atmospheric carbon and increase soil fertility. So naturally, you know, and this is the other thing. Which they've stated in Australia's pandemic preparedness report, Michael, which is where the Global Pandemic Centre will be run from. They've spoken about human encroachment on natural habitats and how this is the cause for climate change. And, you know, if we just leave the animals alone and leave nature alone, it'll somehow stop climate change, which is just the biggest farce. You know, CO2 is the gas of life, and humans have been, encroaching on nature and interacting with nature since the dawn of time. Nothing new has changed here. And if we want to talk about polluting the earth, let's start with China. You know, I mean, it's very, very clear what the agenda is here. But particularly with this tri-state city, and I'm going to bring up the map again because I looked at it last time that you told me about it. I mean, this is all these spots that they've identified. Is this going to be the districts, Michael? Is this what they're planning on doing, having districts like they said they would do here in Australia?
Oh, yeah. They're clear about it. They don't hide it. This is the thing about evil. Evil doesn't hide. Mein Kampf. I mean, you know, Hitler wrote the book. I mean, Pol Pot, Mao, they all said what they were going to do, and they executed, right? Al-Qaeda was very clear what they were going to do. They didn't hide it. When the second airplane hit the building, I was already tracking on those sorts of things. When that second airplane hit the building, I was like, that was Al-Qaeda. Now, you know, they had said that they didn't say they were going to hit the World Trade Centers, but we knew they were going to attack us in some spectacular way. And for those who have been tracking Al-Qaeda for years, which I had, we knew something was coming. I didn't know what, but anyway. Again, World Economic Forum. Clearly evil. I mean, like Dr. Evil, Klaus Schwab. You remember Masako Gannaha, the Japanese journalist?
Yes, we spoke about this last time.
He had almost no security. Yes. He's not in charge. That guy, he's a meat puppet. I call him meat bots. They're like robots, but they're meat bots. He himself is just one of the meat bots. He's just like a chief meat bot.
Yes.
You know, we've got these robots, and now we've got meat bots. Those are the people that are, you know, he's been brainwashing. That's one of the things. You brainwash people to brainwash people, right?
Yes.
They're self-replicating, right? That's, you know, it's built into that software code, you might say, to, you know, first of all, destroy opposition. Secondly, reload program, right? You know, and regenerate, right? And so that's what people like Klaus Schwab, but he's clearly expendable. He clearly won't be with us much longer anyway. You can see he's, you know, his battery's running low. And look at Greta Thunberg. Again, she was over in Davos, had no escort except for one person she was with, could not even find the train station. So she's like the darling of the World Economic Forum. And she's at Davos during the summit. And she was lost in town, didn't even have a car to the train station, right? These people are being put out to dry. And again, Klaus Schwab had almost no security. And he was driving an Audi hybrid, by the way. He was driving a hybrid car. It wasn't an electric car. It was a hybrid.
But again, yeah. It's the hypocrisy. You know, our prime minister, for example, is talking about the dangers of climate change and reducing emissions and all this sort of stuff. And yet he's jet setting around the world to ride bicycles in, I don't know, India or something. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And it's a mockery of anyone that has of intelligent people. They really treat people as though they're stupid. And then what will happen is that people that aren't aware that that is actually the reason why they're treating you that way, because they want you to feel stupid, you'll eventually feel stupid because their tactics will get to you. And this is that deep psychological warfare, that info warfare that we spoke about last time. It penetrates very, very deep in the human psyche. And so it's so important to understand these tactics and be ahead of them. We've got a couple of minutes left, Michael. I want to just talk to you quickly about what your plans are now. I mean, what are the Dutch farmers going to do now? Did they get the outcome that they wanted from these protests, or is the attack on them still continuing?
Let me answer that. I want to say one more thing about wolves. There was something in the German news last week. A lady was on her, I think it was a bicycle, and some wolves started to chase her, but she outran them. It was in the German news. Anyway, there you go. It's just a matter of time until the wolves are eating children. And I'm totally serious. You know, the wolves will absolutely eat children as quickly as they'll eat a sheep. And so that, big bad wolf. Now, when the Dutch farmers, speaking of Dutch farmers, if they play defense, they're definitely going to lose. You cannot win something like this playing defense. You will just lose. You'll delay your loss by playing a hard defense, but you will lose. You have to go the way the French do it or somebody along those lines. The French farmers basically have terrorized the French government. And when I say terrorized, I don't mean with bombs like the Religion of Peace. I'm talking about they don't kill people, but they'll come and just block streets. They'll block the government. They'll block, and cause elections to shift and that sort of thing. The French, I used to think that every time I go to France or some protest going on, in the airport or anywhere you go, and at some point it gets to be irritating. Actually, there's so many protests, but then over time I see there's some wisdom to that as well. And I used to think that the French were wrong to always protest to keep every little small farm, and they protest like crazily. But now I see that it's wisdom, actually. It's very smart that they've been doing that. They were right all along. These small farms everywhere are vital for the national security and for the security of the people, so that they have their own food security. So the French, anytime there's any encroachment on the French farmers, they go they bring out the chainsaws. I mean, they bring out those manure spreaders and start spraying it all over the government vehicles and the police and the front doors of the government buildings and that sort of thing, blocking streets, blocking, and people just don't want to rile up the farmers. And they've got lots and lots of tiny little farms, and you go to French grocery stores and you can get very inexpensive and high quality food. So I don't know who's right and who's wrong. I think the French are right, actually.
It takes
You know, is
courage
it
though,
irritating
Michael. It takes
sometimes?
courage,
Yeah, but they stand up.
and as the agenda has progressed, people are being worn down and they are losing some of that courage. Not all, but they're losing, they feel as if there's no point because there have been so many battles lost along the way. But it isn't about winning every single battle along the way. It's about winning some battles. And as long as you haven't
Winning
given
the
up,
war.
hey, what was that?
Winning the war, right.
Correct.
Yeah.
And eventually
Yep.
leading to winning the war. It's not every single battle that's going to be won. When two enemies are at war, the one side doesn't win every battle. And that's the point that I'm trying to make. So I think we have a lot to learn from like the French farmers who get very creative in the ways that they protest, who don't give up until they get what they want. This really is the battle of our lives, and so the people have to continue being active in whatever space and whatever sphere of influence they have, Michael. What are other ways that people can continue to be involved in this?
We're doing one right now by talking about it and talking with others who can take your link and spread it around. That is a big way of fighting information game, because this is obviously mostly an information war, right? It's mostly magnetizing people, right, and into ways that are either helpful or hurtful, or clearly the globalists are trying to make farm animals out of us. That's clearly what's happening. We can see it. It's obvious. Tri-State City. You might as well just call it the barn, the human barn, where you're not even allowed to go into the forest, right? They'll have wolves in the forest. It's just a matter of time until you're not allowed, until people are saying, well, the only the WEF is saying, the World Economic Forum is saying, oh, the reason that the wolves are killing the sheep or the cows because they're hungry, because there's farms here. It's just a matter of time until they do things like this.
I agree with you. The one thing I'll say to your point, yes, sharing information is one way. I grew up knowing about the New World Order, but it was documentaries like, for example, the expose that Alex Jones did on Bohemian Grove that really woke me up to the satanic aspect of the agenda. And all of the research that I've been able to do over the years through the people that dig deep into this stuff has led me to the point where I couldn't couldn't stay silent and needed to do to take further action, and then Z Media was born. So that's just one example of what people are able to do. The other thing is to be involved in their local communities, their local politics. The time will come where you cannot let your local mayor get away. In fact, that time is now. Let your local mayor get away with the smart city plans. They need to be stopped dead in their tracks, because this is so sinister. And as you refer to them as human farms, that is exactly what they are. So people really need to take action. I agree. Share this information and share it with people that maybe haven't listened to anything before. Maybe this particular thing will resonate with them. Maybe the farms will resonate with them. Michael, your locals page, I've brought it up on the page again. It's michaelyon.locals.com, and you can join the community there. Michael's very active on there. And of course, I've included your other website, michaelyon.com. Where to now for you, Michael? Now that when you leave the Netherlands, where are you going?
There's an election here on the 15th of March, so that's this week. And I'll stay here for the election, and then I'm going to go to Japan and check out farmer and fisherman issues in Japan. Actually, when I was on Jordan Peterson yesterday with Ava Vlardingerbrook, I talked about this, and I mentioned it to Ava. If you were to go to Japan, which I've written three books that are only in Japanese, by the way. I wrote them in English, but they're only for the Japanese market, trying to wake them up to the information war because they're under severe attack. But if you go to Japan, you will see that it's the same thing as going on there as here. It's the same thing. It's just got a different accent and different eyes. It's the same thing. It's just the little details are different. Here they talk about Stickstoff, which is nitrogen in Dutch language. And they talk about, things like that, but it's, so the details change, but the overall form factor is exactly the same, whether it's here or United States and other countries. We're under direct attack by the World Economic Forum, which is enmeshed with the Chinese Communist Party.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I'd be interested to hear more about your travel in Japan, Michael. We'll definitely stay in contact. We definitely want to have you back on. We really appreciate all the time that you've given us and your analysis and all the work that you do. And please travel safe as you're out there reporting on this insanity, Michael.
Thank you for having me on, Maria. It's really important. These elections just happened, and there's we've got to come back on because there's just too much more to talk about.
Yes, absolutely agree with you. Well, we'll stay in touch. For everyone watching, share this information everywhere. If you're watching on Rumble, subscribe to the channel. Follow Michael Yon on Twitter as well. And just get it out there. Get it out there. They are coming for the farms. It's going to happen in every single country. There is a specific attack in the Netherlands right now, but we've had Wade from Billboard Battalion come on, Wade Northhausen from Australia, telling us the same thing. He's telling us that food shortages will come in our country. It is the same playbook everywhere. It's just different tactics used based on the country that's being attacked and what they can get away with based on what the people will put up with. So we mustn't let them. Thank you again, Michael, for your time.
Thank you, Maria, and talk with you soon. Let's talk in Japan.
Sure. In my last interview with Michael that I did last week, he spoke about the importance of being prepared. He says he was never really a prepper, but now he is all about it. He's telling people catastrophic food shortages are coming and you must prepare, you and your household. If you're in the United States, head to Heaven's Harvest in the link in the description below. Use promo code Z for 5% off your order. These guys have a huge range of things like emergency survival food and most importantly, water filtration and storage. Michael Yon talks about the importance of making sure you know where your water is coming from, having a water filtration option with you everywhere that you go. He carries one everywhere. And of course, the importance of growing your own food. I talk about this all the time. Heirloom seeds, very, very high quality seeds, full of nutrition and nothing like the stuff that you're buying in the supermarket right here from Heaven's Harvest. So please do go and prepare you and your household. If you're in Australia, head to survivalsuppliesaustralia.com. The link is in the description below. These guys have the largest range in the country of all of your survival needs, including bug out bags, grab and go bags. They also have water filtration and bottles. I have a couple of these myself. I bought it from them. Really, really good to have with you because you never know when you're going to be in a position where you need to drink water, and there's no safe water to drink. So this stuff is crucial. Bug out bags are crucial. Also, emergency survival food, all of everything you need is on this website. With the financial market and all of the banks shutting in the United States, I've been talking about gold and silver, precious metals, for a really long time. You heard from Goldco at the start of this program for the United States. If you're in Australia, head to Gold Bullion Australia Group. They've been very, very good to anyone who's come from Z Media, and they really are the ones we trust the most in this country. We use them ourselves personally. They're an amazing group of people and ready to answer all of your questions. If you're in anywhere in the world, really, head to sat123.com/Maria. There's a special promotion on this month for a bundle of an off-the-grid power bundle or an Imasat iSat phone and Bivy combo. This device right here is a revolutionary device. It's got a little SOS button there, so if you are in an emergency situation and you have your location services on, you can notify people that you are in danger, five people that you trust, and these sat phones will work anywhere on the planet. This one in particular is used by military. It is that good, military-grade sat phones, and I'll tell you what, I've got two myself of the Imasat, and this thing is fantastic. It works, and I really feel safer having it. So these things are absolutely crucial. Make sure you prepare. Don't be caught out, because the globalists have come against us, but we will never, ever let them catch us unprepared. God bless you all. I'll see you later on this week right here on Uncensored.